Welcome to In Their Own Words, the audio memories of leading members of the British Tennis Journalists Association. In this episode, Clive Brunskill, one of the world's outstanding sports photographers, explains how he gets those critical shots and why, late in life, he became the wedding photographer to the stars. Clive, it's great to catch up with you. You are, of course, a world-renowned photographer and a committee member of the British Tennis Journalists Association. How did that come about?
Probably by default, because my great friend Tommy Hindley was on the committee for many years, and he used to always get the Wimbledon tickets and the stuff, and he'd say it's part of the Lawn Tennis Writers Association back then, and he would never tell me about it or never wanted to introduce me to anyone, and I think it was just kind of weird. And then he suddenly said to me one day, yeah, I'm on the committee of the Lawn Tennis Writers Association, which is now the BTJ. And I said, oh, right. Anyway, cut a long story short, sadly, he died in 2013. And somebody, one of you guys, approached me and just said, would you like to take Tommy's position? Because we need a photographer. And I said no at first because I just felt I was jumping into his shoes and he just died, whatever. But a year later, I took it. So that's how I ended up on it.
Well, you are representing a very important aspect of sports coverage. And your career is taking you to every possible type of sport. And also, as we'll talk about later, into the commercial side of sports coverage as well. But you're only 13 when you picked up that first camera. What was that first camera?
I started to get into photography or realize about photography when I was about just 12 and a half, whatever. And then at 13, for my birthday, I got a Russian Zenith E camera, which was an absolute beast when you think back to how it was to what we have now. They're like spaceships now compared to an old car. And so I started to teach myself photography from getting that camera. And you may ask, why did I get that camera? And I got that camera because I was a skateboarder. I love sport. I was in the team, the track and field team at school, more middle distance runner. I was surrounded by tennis because my mum was a county player. And then my dad was a track cyclist who actually beat the world champion back just after the war, but then had his career cut short because of having to go and I think it was the Suez Canal, one of those, and he was in the RAF, so he was called up. So I was always around sport. I love football because I'm from Liverpool, but I used to skateboard. And I went down a skate park one day, and at that point I was going to be an engineer because my dad wanted me to be an engineer. And I came back from the skate park this one day and said, Mom, Dad, I've seen this guy there who skateboards, and then he photographs other skateboarders and he develops the pictures and he brings them the next week and we all look at them. I said, that's what I want to do. My mum said, this is brilliant, Clive. This is fantastic. Because my mum was very much for the arts and all that. And my dad said, you're not doing that. No chance. He said, and you know what you'll end up as, lad? He says in his Scouse voice, you'll end up as a wedding photographer with a flat cap and a rain mac on a Saturday doing people's bloody weddings. Later on, before he died, he said, I couldn't have been more wrong about the sports business and photography. He said, I didn't ever realise it was what it was or what it became, like, as we know, sport today. And I just remember him saying to me many a time, even 10 years after I'd started, when are you going to get a proper job? He never, ever saw it as a proper job, which is funny because that's what Tim Henman said to me the other week. I was with Tim. I can't remember where I was now. And we were talking. I said, oh, Tim, it's such hard work. You know, I'm tired. And he said, you've never had a proper job. And I looked at him and he then said to me, and actually, I've never had a proper job either. So that's how I got into it. And the rest was history, really, you know.
I think you could probably say that your father had a bit of a crystal ball because you did end up being a wedding photographer, but it was for Djokovic's wedding.
That's a really weird one because I'd never done a wedding in my life. And then I go and pick the biggest wedding of the year. And I didn't pick it. What happened was I basically knew Novak from when he was around 16. I'd done a shoot with him in Paris, Bercy, when he was just a kid on a snooker table for one of the papers. And I always got on with him. After that, I got on with him. And I then did a shoot where I've been today to Stoke Poges, to the Stoke Park. And I did a shoot with him there in 2010, just before he won Wimbledon. And prior to that, the reason I got that shoot was because I'd done a shoot with him back in 2007 underwater in Monte Carlo at the Monte Carlo Bay Hotel, where he absolutely infuriated the person from the Hugo Boss shop who'd give him a beautiful black evening suit for me to do these shots like James Bond in this beautiful setting. And then I said, hey, I'm going to be doing Rafa Nadal later underwater for a magazine. And he said to me, wow, you're going to shoot him underwater? I said, yeah, later on, whenever he gets here. And he said to me, well, you can do me underwater. And I said, well, I've got all the kit. And of course, I get in the water thinking he's not going to get in. And he dives straight in with the racket and the suit, and it was completely ruined. So anyway, we did that. We did a few of the little things. And then obviously I did the big shoot in 2010. And it was funny. We tried to sell it to many places and nobody wanted Novak Djokovic. He was not even on the radar. And then he had this amazing season. 2011. He had this amazing season where he just went and won everything. And then he finished with Wimbledon, world number one, the whole thing. And the rest was history. You know, we did very well out of these shoots and money went to his charities, the Novak Djokovic Foundation. So it came round to the wedding and Novak said, listen, Elena and me, you know, we really like you and we'd like you to do the wedding. Well, through his agent, he said that. So I went to Montenegro. He said to me, the weather's going to be amazing. It's going to be an incredible time. We're going to do this whole week. We've got a bit of a party after Wimbledon, because he won Wimbledon against Federer on the Sunday. On the Tuesday, he had a party. So we did that, photographed all that. That was one for her Low magazine. And then we did the wedding on Thursday, I think it was. I think it was a Thursday. Then he had a second wedding, which was the family, close family. And I just remember on the day of the wedding, and I'm thinking, I took all these assistants with me. Everything was great. And on the day of the wedding, I looked out the curtain and it was streaming rain. It was going sideways. I've got a view of the ocean from this place where they were getting married. And I'm like, what have I done? I thought, I'm not even a wedding photographer. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, and now it's raining, which is even going to mess up all the plans I had for pictures outside. Luckily, the rain stopped. The wedding went ahead under very dark skies. We got all the pictures done for Hello Magazine. And then on the last picture, the rain came and it was the biggest storm you've ever seen. But we were in the tent then and we did all the actual wedding. So, but it was one of those that was just, I said, I'll never do a wedding again.
Was the pressure as much to get those pictures right as it is not to miss the killer shot at a Wimbledon final, or a World Cup final?
The pressure was more because you had a Low magazine paying, you know, a rather large sum of money, obviously that went to the Novak Djokovic Foundation. You know, they were breathing down my neck, not Novak's, my neck, that they wanted to see images. They needed to see their front cover. They needed to see these beautiful spreads. Well, I think we did pretty well, you know, with my assistants helping me, and I took some assistants who work on weddings, very good wedding photographers. So they helped me as well. So I had a lot of backup and a big team, but the pressure was big. It was massive, yeah. But I knew Novak and Elena so well that I didn't feel the pressure from them. And I remember Elena saying to me on the morning of the wedding, I was doing her getting ready and doing all the traditional pictures with their bridesmaids. And I remember she said to me, oh, it's funny, there's a story in Hello magazine about why Novak's chose, or why we've chose you to do our wedding and not like a top Serbian wedding photographer or a top wedding photographer. She read it to me saying it's a friend of Novak's is doing it. He's a tennis photographer. And then the interviewers at the end had put something like, let's see how he goes. So I said, that's not a lot of pressure then, is it, for the start before we've even taken a picture? But yeah, it was good. It was good.
Your career is taking you to some of the great iconic sporting moments. And yeah, people pay a lot of money to be there and they think, oh, how lucky, how close are you with that camera? Because you're working. So how do you make sure that you're concentrating on the action as well as the moment? Because you want to capture the whole event, don't you? But at the same time, you can't miss that killer shot.
No, I mean, there's ways of doing it. You know, I mean, you break the event down, obviously, and you have a team of photographers, say, for, let's just say Wimbledon, for instance. You have a team of photographers. We all know each day what we're doing. So I'll control center court that one day,
Julian Finney will be on court one, and then we swap it round. So we have a rota, so it's all fair. Then, you know, you go to, say, a big match like, say, the final. Well, there's three of us or four of us there. It's funny. It's like Roger Federer said to me once. He said to me, I said, oh, hey, Roger, I was in the back with him doing some pictures before a match in Cincinnati. And I said, you know, you're playing so-and-so tonight. Are you worried? He says, it's just another match. And when I take that philosophy now, when I go to, say, the Wimbledon final, Alcaraz last year, it's just another match. It's just what we've done every day for the last 42 years I've done it. So for me, I turn up, I have the same procedure of every match, how I get some early action. And then when a game gets on, as you'll know, you know, as an experienced writer, you start to realise where the stories are coming, what the angle is, who's going to celebrate. What if they get this and they don't, you know, and you just know, it's instinct. You just know where to look for the pictures and obviously match point. You know it's coming, and yes, you can miss it. It can be out of focus. Yes, you can miss it because he turns the wrong way, like Andy Murray winning in 2013 when he got delirious on the court and didn't realise and thought his family box was that end. And we all went, oh my God. And Andy said to me, I said, you really peeved off all the photographers that day because we were all on East waiting to turn to your mum and the family. And he said, well, were they upset? I said, oh yeah, they were really upset. And he just laughed. It was so funny. You know, it was like, because it's just one of those things, isn't it? That's sport.
But Clive, if my pen runs out, I go and get another pen. If your camera breaks down on court, and they are so very technical now, aren't they? That the stuff you're operating with and you're sending stuff from courtside, you're using Wi-Fi. It's an amazing chain from when you would have started. Is that the nightmare, that the camera just stops working?
Oh, I mean, that is your biggest nightmare of all, is a match point in a final or a winning goal at the World Cup or, you know, in the final. And your camera locks, which it can do. Occasionally, these new ones do get so confused. There's so much going on. You're sending images. You're still shooting images. When it locks, the instant thing to do is pull the battery, put it back in. It all goes back to the way it was. But you don't think of that when the blokes hit the ball, the serve, and, you know, Carlos Alcaraz is sliding along the baseline to get the return, and your camera locks and you go, well, that could be it. You just keep pressing the shutter thinking, is it going to happen? You know, is it going to start working again? And then you've missed the match point. It's not happened to me on a massive, massive point, but it's happened to some people and, you know, it can happen. But that is the worst situation you can have. Yeah, that is just, that's what nightmares are made of.
Isn't there a sort of a bond between photographers where if somebody misses a shot that you'll help them out with a negative, as it used to be?
No, that you're referring back to the days of Monte Fresco and the Daily Mirror, when he developed the thing called GANS, the GANS Society, which was Give Us a Neg Society. So basically, when all the agencies, the philosophy behind that was when all the agencies became big, like Reuters, AP, Getty and all this, or Allsport in those days, we had maybe two photographers at a game. And the agencies would cover each corner and we'd have, between all of us, we'd have two, three, four photographers in corners. And obviously, if you were a solo guy for the Daily Mirror and you were the wrong side for the goal and you didn't get it or you didn't get the celebration, well, what you can say to your editor? And then the editor uses an agency thing. And then the newspaper photographers felt that, well, that's going to danger their careers because they'll say, well, we're getting all the agency stuff. We don't need you guys. So they made this, it was almost a pact between them all. You're in that corner and you get the goal, you share it. Next time when I get the goal and you haven't got it, you get a frame. So that was what that was. It was called Give Us an Egg Society, GANS. But us agency guys are not allowed to do that. I mean, we live and die by if we get it or we don't get it. We have to just face the music or the plaudits if you do get it. So,
and the actual sending of a photograph, people may not quite understand now how it used to be and how it is now. I mean, the good old days, is that there's Monte Fresco had talked about with a guy waiting outside on a motorcycle to take the negatives off to Fleet Street to be printed. But
oh, yeah.
Those days are long gone. I mean, new technology has revolutionized what you can do, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I lived through those days, the end of them. I mean, I lived through the taking your processing kit, developing the film in a toilet in the stadium or whatever, having to not even wash it. You just wipe the bleach off it and then you put it into a printer and you made a print, like a 10x8 print. And then you had to leave a white space at the bottom where you type the caption. You'd have to stick that on. with a Pritt stick or whatever it was that they used. And then you would wrap it on a drum and it would spin and it would, the thing would move across the picture and it would send the picture. And if you remember in the old days, and you looked at any paper, Sunday Times, whatever, and you'd see a picture and it had lots of lines on it. That was how it was transmitted. Couldn't transmit it smooth, fine quality, but it was as good as it would be. And now I saw that side of it very briefly. And then I saw the wire side of it where we used to digitize the negative that we processed and send it. And now we've got the complete opposite of everything, which is, which we dreamed of as kids, where you take the picture, it's highest quality you could get, as good as film, and you hit a button, and that's gone to America in 1 second or 2 seconds to our picture desk, or, you know, the Getty Images picture desk in London. Or, and you can be firing over pictures as you're shooting them. They're literally from camera to customer, like the papers. It's literally, I don't know, probably 30 seconds, 45 seconds a picture to be captioned, corrected, sent, and it's sitting with the editor ready to lock onto a page or a website. So it's just phenomenal technology.
And of course, the technology now means that everybody in the crowd has got a pretty good quality camera. I mean, how has that affected your work?
Everybody's a photographer now. That's what I say. Everybody, even new writers are photographers. You can snap a picture and can be better than what we've got. The iPhones now take pictures as good a quality almost as what we shoot on the big cameras. Yes, you've not got the versatility, but there's still a market for good photographers and people who've got relationships with sports stars, you know, who can get more out of them outside of the events. They're still in the media sitting in the best seats. You know, someone up in the crowd is not allowed to take a 300mm lens or a 500mm lens in. They can only take up to a certain length. But it's just opened up photography that everyone's a photographer now. It's a picture, you know, the world eats pictures now, you know, Instagram, social media, you know, websites. I was only in Paris the other week and we were wiring, we got the young guys wiring for us now back in London or in Paris. And they said, oh, we've sent those, we've got those out. We'll wait a little bit and then we'll send the next when we get a celebration. And I said, no, you've got to keep sending now because everything's live. So all the paper websites, everything is a live feed. So if Andy Murray just slips over on the floor, I send that picture. I can be looking at my phone on the BBC website and that picture pops up and there's a little thing. Yeah, Andy just fell there and it's on there. It's literally live transmission straight onto these websites. So you're constantly sending to feed that animal now, which you didn't do in the old days. You'd send six pictures from a match because that's all you could get over. But those six pictures would be the goal, the celebration, the manager at the end, and maybe a good action picture. Now you send 30 action pictures, 20 celebrations because the camera takes 30 frames a second. You see, you've got all these different angles, you know. It's just, yeah. Just different.
The other aspect of your working life is the commercial side. And you've worked with, and I've got the list in front of me, and it would be the sort of list of combinations you wouldn't expect. You know, Sir Andy Murray and Britney Spears, Jennifer Lopez and Rafa Nadal. It must be great to get away from sport and do something like that with a star in a different sort of aspect of the entertainment, which is what they are. They're all entertainment, aren't they?
Even David Beckham had class as entertainment, you know, in that respect. You know, he was beyond sport and football, A-list celebrity. But no, the whole thing with people might say, well, what was he doing photographing Beyonce or whatever? I had a great client, we still do, obviously, but I have a great client that I worked with really everything. I did all their football, Pepsi Cola, and that. We're still working with them now, but obviously I don't do as much because obviously people move on and art directors move on and new guys come in with their favourite people. But Pepsi, I was doing all the football, David Beckham for 10 years. I did all the Leo Messi stuff. I was doing their other brands like Lay's potato chips, which Messi is sponsored by. So I was doing all this and Gatorade and you name it, Quaker Oats, whatever it was that they own. And then they said to me, would you be interested in doing some music? And they said to me, would you come and photograph Robbie Williams for us? And I said, Oh no, I said, that's not my cup of tea. I'm not sure, I'm not confident. And I never take anything as a photographer that I don't feel I can do. I don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. I want to be good at what I do. Then they said to me, well, listen, maybe next time. Anyway, comes around again. And they're doing Britney Spears, Beyonce and Pink in a new commercial with Enrique Iglesias. No football involved. It's music. It's a music, Pepsi music commercial. Will you come and do the stills for us? Will you come and do some studio stuff for us with it? And I went, yeah, okay. Anyway, I go down to Rome. We shoot in the Cinquecento studios. I think they did a bit of Gladiator there. They've got the auditorium, the gladiatorial auditorium. It's all based around gladiators, which fitted in with the David Beckham gladiator shoot we did with the footballers. That was first, and then this came second a year later. And I'm like, oh my God. And on the day I was shooting it, it was a bit like Novak's wedding. What have I done? I don't know any pop star. I'm not even familiar with their music, obviously. I was a bit younger back then. In about 18 minutes or 20 minutes, I'm going to have Beyonce, Britney Spears and Pink on my set to shoot this ad for them for a print campaign. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, what am I going to do, you know? Anyway, Britney Spears comes and she was quite cool. And I went, hi, Britney, I'm Clive, the photographer. And she walks around and she's getting makeup done. And then Pink comes and she's really cool, laid back. Everything was great. I'm thinking, oh, this is all right. But I'm absolutely nervous about Beyonce because I was a big fan of hers. So Beyonce starts to walk across from the other side of the thing. And I'm like, hi, Beyonce. I said, it's okay if I call her Beyonce. Yeah. Beyonce, I'm Clive, the photographer. And, you know, nice to meet you. And I'm thinking in my head, that's what I say. I'm Clive, the photographer. And she starts walking across and she gets closer and closer. She's in this gold outfit, legs everywhere, walking along with this big gladiatorial Roman spear. And as she gets to me, she goes, hi, I'm Beyonce. And all I could say was, I know. I thought, you stupid get. I said, I know. You know, it's like, why would I say I know? I know she's Beyonce, you know, but she took the words from me because I waited and then she went first. And so it was like, anyway, it was fine. We got on good and we did a great shoot and clients were happy, which is the main thing. And yeah, had a lot of fun and shot her about three more times after that. So that was good.
Clive, do you allow yourself to have favourites in the various different sports that you shoot? I mean, particularly tennis, do you have someone who you know is always going to be really nice to do with?
Look, all the tennis guys are great. You know, I've never really had a bad experience with any of the tennis people. I mean, they are well-educated, nice lads, a lot of fun. You know, they're all different personalities, obviously. But, you know, the likes of Novak, I love working with because he's fun. Rafa Nadal, got a soft spot for Rafa because obviously I did a lot of work with Rafa over the years, a lot of shoots. Obviously Andy, because I knew him from many years back and did his wedding as well for him and Kim. You know, favorite-wise, Roger as well. You know, those four are probably my favorites, the big four, because I've gone right through their whole career and just had great shoots with them, great times with them. They've always been absolutely brilliant for me, really great with me, never had a bad word or never had any issues. They're, you know, really good pros who do the job properly, get it done. If it needs another 4 minutes, they'll do it. It's not like, I got to go. Like, you know, you get that a little bit with the footballers. Oh, I'm leaving at 11, mate. You know, well, it's going to take a bit longer to get a picture. They're not that bothered. But the tennis players are. Again, the girls as well. You know, Maria Sharapova was always my favourite because I basically, you know, knew her from when she was 13, 14. I did her first ever shoot because I'd rung Max Eisenbud up and said, you've got this new girl. Richard Evans has been talking about her in the Sunday Times. And I just really would like to do a shoot. And we were doing Anna Kournikova in California and Maria was nearby. And so Max said, yeah, I'll bring her along. How's tomorrow sound? And we're like, we were just about to pack away everything and go back to LA. And it was like, yeah, cool. So we did this young girl who then won Wimbledon a few years later. So I've always got a soft spot for Maria. I always got on great with her. You know, it's, yeah. And then favourites of today, probably to shoot now, Carlos Alcaraz, hands down, best player I've ever seen play the game, as in of that age. Phenomenal player, lovely lad, and really into photography. He's come back and given photographers, and I know we have told him this, he's given photographers a new lease of life because his play is so dynamic and so explosive, and you don't know what he's going to do, and he's playing party tricks, you know, literally through the leg shots, you'll get a tweener in a game, or you'll get a fantastic volley, or it's just incredible. And so he's now one of the firm favourites to photograph.
Clive, thank you so much for explaining to the listeners why you are probably the luckiest wedding photographer in the world. Good luck at getting a few in focus at this year's Wimbledon. Thank you so much.